Chapter 38. The Realities and Imaginations of the 19th Century. First, the Mechanical Revolution. Second, relation of the mechanical to the Industrial Revolution. Third, the fermentation of ideas in 1848. Fourth, the development of the idea of socialism. Fifth, shortcomings of socialism as a scheme of human society. Sixth, how Darwinism affected religious and political ideas. Seventh, the idea of nationalism. Eighth, Europe between 1848 and 1878. Ninth, the second scramble for overseas empires. Tenth, the Indian precedent in Asia. 11th, the history of Japan. 12th, close of the period of overseas expansion. 13th, the British Empire in 1914. First, the career and personality of Napoleon I bulks disproportionately in the 19th century histories. He was of little significance to the broad onward movement of human affairs. He was an interruption, a reminder of latent evils, a thing like the bacterium of some pestilence. Even regarded as a pestilence, he wasn't of supreme rank. He killed far fewer people than the influenza epidemic of 1918, and produced less political and social disruption than the plague of Justinian. Some such interlude had to happen, and some such patched-up settlement of Europe as the Concert of Europe, because there was no worked-out system of ideas upon which a new world could be constructed. And even the Concert of Europe had in it an element of progress. It did at least set aside the individualism of Machiavellian monarchy, and declare that there was a human, or at any rate a European, commonweal. If it divided the world among the kings, it made respectful gestures towards human unity and the service of God and man. The permanently effective task before mankind, which had to be done before any new and enduring social and political edifice was possible, the task upon which the human intelligence is, with many interruptions and amidst much anger and turmoil, still engaged, was, and is, the task of working out and applying a science of property as a basis for freedom and social justice, a science of currency to ensure and preserve an efficient economic medium, a science of government and collective operations whereby in every community men may learn to pursue their common interests in harmony, a science of world politics through which the stark waste and cruelty of warfare between races, peoples, and nations may be brought to an end, and the common interests of mankind brought under a common control, and above all, a worldwide system of education to sustain the will and interest of men in their common human adventure. The real makers of history in the 19th century, the people whose consequences will be determining human life a century ahead, were those who advanced and contributed to this fivefold constructive effort. Compared to them, the foreign ministers and statesmen and politicians of this period were no more than a number of troublesome and occasionally incendiary schoolboys and a few metal thieves, playing about and doing transitory mischief amidst the accumulating materials upon the site of a great building whose nature they didn't understand. And while throughout the 19th century the mind of Western civilization, which the Renaissance had released, gathered itself to the task of creative social and political reconstruction that still lies before it, there swept across the world a wave of universal change in human power and the material conditions of life that the first scientific efforts of that liberated mind had made possible. The prophecies of Roger Bacon began to live in reality. The accumulating knowledge and confidence of the little succession of men who'd been carrying on the development of science now began to bear fruit that common men could understand. The most obvious first fruit was the steam engine, The first steam engines in the 18th century were pumping engines used to keep water out of the newly opened coal mines. These coal mines were being worked to supply coke for iron smelting, for which wood charcoal had previously been employed. It was James Watt, a mathematical instrument maker of Glasgow, who improved this steam-pumping engine and made it available for the driving of machinery. The first engine so employed was installed in a cotton mill in Nottingham in 1785. In 1804, Trevithick adapted the Watt engine to transport and made the first locomotive. In 1825, the first railway between Stockton and Darlington was opened for traffic. The original engine, Locomotive No. 1, 1825, still adorns Darlington platform. By the middle of the century, a network of railways had spread all over Europe. Here was a sudden change in what had long been a fixed condition of human life, the maximum rate of land transport. After the Russian disaster, Napoleon travelled from near Vilna to Paris in 312 hours. This was a journey of about 1,400 miles. He was travelling with every conceivable advantage, and he averaged under 5 miles an hour. An ordinary traveller couldn't have done this distance in twice the time. These were about the same maximum rates of travel as held good between Rome and Gaul in the 1st century A.D., or between Sardis and Susa in the 4th century B.C. Then suddenly came a tremendous change. The railways reduced this journey for any ordinary traveller to less than 48 hours. That's to say, they reduced the chief European distances to about a tenth of what they had been. They made it possible to carry out administrative work in areas 10 times as great as any that had hitherto been workable under one administration. The full significance of that possibility in Europe still remains to be realized. Europe is still netted in boundaries drawn in the horse and road era. In America, the effects were immediate. To the United States of America, sprawling westward, it meant the possibility of a continuous access to Washington, however far the frontier travelled across the continent. It meant unity, sustained on a scale that would otherwise have been impossible. The steamboat was, if anything, a little ahead of the steam engine in its earlier phases. There was a steamboat, the Charlotte Dundas, on the Firth of Clyde Canal in 1802, and in 1807 an American named Fulton had a paying steamer, the Clermont, with British-built engines upon the Hudson River above New York. The first steamship to put to sea was also an American, the Phoenix, which went from New York, Hoboken, to Philadelphia. So, too, was the first ship using steam, she also had sails, to cross the Atlantic, the Savannah, in 1819. All these were paddle-wheel boats, and paddle-wheel boats aren't adapted to work in heavy seas. The paddles smash too easily, and the boat is then disabled. The screw steamship followed rather slowly. Many difficulties had to be surmounted before the screw was a practicable thing. Not until the middle of the century did the tonnage of steamships upon the sea begin to overhaul that of sailing ships. After that, the evolution in sea transport was rapid. For the first time, men began to cross the seas and oceans with some certainty as to the date of their arrival. The transatlantic crossing, which had been an uncertain adventure of several weeks, which might stretch to months, was accelerated until in 1910 it was brought down, in the case of the fastest boats, to under 5 days, with a practically notifiable hour of arrival. All over the oceans there was the same reduction in the time and the same increase in the certainty of human communications.